Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Today we have two speakers. They are both compulsive overeaters who have at least 6 months of abstinence, have recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and who maintain recovery on a daily basis. After their shares, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what either or both of the speakers have shared. So, welcome. We'll go first with Pat B., a compulsive overeater from Ontario.
Thank you, everybody. It's been a while since I shared part of my story. And do you have a time? Oh, there. Thank you. I've been in OA since 1984, November the 5th, 1984. And before that, it's so interesting. There are no coincidences. We say coincidence is God remaining anonymous. And tonight, before the meeting, I was talking to a sponsee, and we were reading from page 73 of the Big Book. If you have a copy of the Big Book, turn to page 73, because it just tells my story so amazingly. It's really eerie how Bill W., who wrote this book, knew what was going through our minds. Well, because it was going through his mind too. But at the paragraphs that I want to read is the middle. It says, "More than most people," and I'll change the words, "the compulsive eater leads a double life. She is very much the actor," and we talk about the actor in step three. But I'll get more to that if I can. "To the outer world, she presents her stage character." Well, that was me. I did not want anybody. I had such a mask that everything was fine, that nobody knew what was going on with me. Nobody knew why I was so fat. My husband used to say to me, "Pat, you hardly eat anything. I don't know why you're so fat." And I would think, "I know, I don't either." Oh, I knew very well. I'd already eaten two meals before I sat down to dinner, stuffing myself with whatever was available in the house. "So to the outer world, I present my stage character. This is the one I liked my fellows to see. I wanted to enjoy a certain reputation, but," and I just changed the words, "I think in my brain, I don't deserve it." It's not a knowing, it's a thinking, which is an opinion. And that's put there by that part of me that wants to kill me, my ego, the disease. It just wanted me to die. And I just refused. So it says, "This consistency is made worse by the things she does on her sprees. Coming to her senses, she is revolted at certain episodes she vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. She trembles to think someone might have observed her." Oh my goodness, the things I did. I had a husband, I had three kids. We had one car, and when I had the car to go grocery shopping, and I would go to this store that made these what I thought was delicious baked goods, and so I'd buy them because the minute I walked in the store, I could smell them, and they were just calling me, I could feel them. Well, so there were six in a container. Now here's my dilemma. I can't just eat three of them, because when I take the rest home, people are going to say, "Well, where's the other three?" I couldn't not just eat one. Of course, that was stupid. Who would only eat one, No. So I had to eat all of them, but I couldn't put the wrappers and the packaging under the seat where a lot of people kept their stuff. No, my kids would find it, or the dog would find it, and they'd come out and they'd say, "Well, what's all this? Where'd this come from?" And so I had to detour around an extra 3 miles to get to where a 7-Eleven was, so that I could throw the wrappers in their garbage, because of course nobody knew what I was doing. I know I trembled to think someone might have observed me when I was in the fast food stores eating stuff and just shoving it in my mouth and eating. I'm thinking, I hope nobody's watching me. It was just I felt so guilty. If somebody would come in, I could hear them coming in, and I'm busy in the kitchen binging on my usual stuff. And if I could hear somebody come in, I'd take a coffee filter and quick, wrap it in the coffee filter, put it in the garbage. And then after they left, take it out, finish eating it. Yeah, it was, I would eat frozen stuff. I would eat like bad st stuff that had gone bad. I'd cut the bad stuff off and eat the rest of it. You know, I would just do anything that I needed to. And I remember the night before I came to OA, I'd hurt my back at work and I couldn't move. I could hardly move. And the whole time I'm lying there, I'm thinking, well, what am I going to eat? What am I going to eat? I thought, Pat, you can't even get up. You're not going to eat. And I'm getting up and I'm saying, get back on the sofa. And I'm screaming at myself and I could not stop. And I go into the kitchen and I'm making peanut butter sandwiches and eating them as fast as I can. The only reason I stopped is because the kids were coming home for lunch. It was awful, 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 awful. I just felt that I was an invasion of the body snatchers. It was just terrible. It says, as far as I can, I pushed these memories far inside myself. Well, I thought I was. But of course, oh no, because they'd come up at 3 a.m. or and say, Pat, why could you do, you stupid person, told you not to do. Well, actually, it was my ego that told me to do it. And now it's bawling me out for doing it. But that was, I thought I was pushing it inside myself, but I wasn't. It couldn't stay there. It just kept coming. These memories kept coming up and thinking, how, what is wrong with you? It says, I hope they will never see the light of day. I'm under constant fear and tension. And that makes for more eating. Of course it was, because I felt so uncomfortable. I had to eat to make myself feel better. But of course, the problem was then I was beating myself up over eating. I was spending so much time thinking about what I was going to eat, figuring out how I was going to get it, planning on it, and then going and getting it, and then sneaking it, and then hiding it, and then eating it, and then beating myself up over it and starting all over again because I felt so awful and hated myself so much because I'd do not done it. I couldn't stand it. And I was trying to push these ideas down with food. It was awful. It says here, psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We've spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Well, of course not. I couldn't follow my advice. I couldn't follow the advice. They'd give me a diet and say, follow this and you'll be get skinny and everything will be fine. I'd been on diets before. I was a professional dieter. I was a lifetime member of Weight Watchers. I knew what it was like to be thin, and life was not better. It wasn't, it had nothing to do with what size I was. It was just, you know, unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic people. I was honest with no one else. I couldn't be. They would think I was awful because I'm sure nobody else did this. Well, the day I came into this first meeting, they handed me the booklet, a list of 15 questions that they're in our literature. They're on the OA website. 15 questions. And if you answer yes to three or more, you might be a compulsive eater. Well, I answered yes to 15 of them, 14 of them. I think one was that I had never thrown up. I wasn't bulimic or anorexic. But I just sat there and I cried and cried. I thought, how do they know what I've been doing? How is that possible? Why is this written here? Who's been watching me? And it was so interesting because then people started sharing and talking, and they're doing the same. They'd done the same thing. I was like flabbergasted. I thought I was the only one that was so weak-willed, I couldn't stop eating. But I wasn't. And they were sharing stuff that was so amazing about how their lives were not, I mean, they were going through bankruptcy and divorce and their sons in jail and all kinds of terrible things going on for them. But they said, "But I'm not eating over it. God is with me, and I know that this is all about my higher power is going to be helping me through this." Well, I didn't have any concept of God at all. I didn't want to hear about God. I mean, I almost got up and walked out of the meeting because they started talking about God, 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 the God this and God that. I'm thinking, no, I'm not interested in God, because I did not know that there was a difference between spirituality and religion. And of course, what they were talking about was a spiritual God, not a religious God, had nothing to do whatsoever about religion. And I'd never heard of a spiritual God, never heard of that. Did not know that God dwells deep within me and always has been, that higher power has been there the whole time. I had it so blocked. It's one place, I can't remember where it says it's blocked by pomp, which is my pride. And I can't remember what else, but all the stuff, all my troubles that I was taking everything personally, thinking I had to do it all myself. And I was the center of the world for everybody. I was the only one that knew what was right for everybody. I had scripts for them all, handed them all out. Here's what I want you to say when I act like this. So I want you to judge me according to my intentions because I mean well. I want everybody to be happy. And so just because what I'm telling you to do, you don't want to do, maybe, you've got to think about this because I know what's best for you. I know what's best for everybody. I didn't even know what was best for me. But it was crazy, 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 crazy. And I felt so uncomfortable. Well, I spent about 15 years in this program, in the OA program, but it was all about the food and all about being abstinent. While abstinence is very, very important, one of our members describes it as the on-ramp to the highway. You have to build a good on-ramp. You have to be abstinent, and a sponsor will help you do that. But so the thing is that now I can't remember where I was going with that. Oh yes, so it wasn't for many years that I found spirituality in OA. I had to go outside of OA to find the spirituality part of myself, the spiritual part. I know there is no spiritual part of me. I'm all spirit. God is in every atom and cell of my being and flows through my veins and protects me and is with me at all times, no matter what's going on. And I've come to believe that. It is a miracle, but it's not a religious God. No, I didn't want anything to do with them. So it's God of my own understanding. My God is love, is peace. Is just going and watching my dog play with her ball. I get such a kick out of that, just watching her with absolute joy and glee. And I just feel in my heart, all is well, no matter what else is going on around me. I'm having knee surgery on Thursday, and I know it's all going to be fine. It's just going to be, I kind of do this meditation thing where I envision my higher power spirit going into the operating room before anybody gets there and just touching all the instruments and just setting an environment of peace and love and caring. And I know that the hands that touch me are the hands of God. And so, whatever happens, it will happen, and I am good with that. And I just encourage you, if you're new, get a sponsor, start reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, even though it's weird. And that's why you have a sponsor to help kind of translate it. And there's many podcasts you can listen to as well. And that I've got my name here, so you can call me if you want any. Just don't call me Thursday, okay? And maybe not Friday. But after that, I'm going to be bored sitting around because I'm not going to be able to move very much. I'll gotta do my exercises. I will do my exercises. But yeah. So we'll see. Call me. And if I can get back to you, I will. And I think with that, I will close. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much for sharing, Pat. And now we'll have Donna M. share. She's from Ontario as well.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Pat, for your share. My name is Donna M. I'm a compulsive overeater. And both Pat and I volunteered at the beginning of the meeting when our speaker didn't show up. And for me, I've never spoken off the cuff before. So I am trusting and relying on my higher power that what I have to say is something that will be helpful to someone in the room today. So my story is I became a compulsive overeater in my mid-20s. I had a lot of protective factors, I think. And one of them was whenever I was engaging in relationships, that would give me the adrenaline high. So I was a chubby kid. Probably I was a moderate to a hard eater. Chubby, meaning that I was at the high end of a normal body weight. But growing up, it seemed like I was bigger than everybody else. Everyone was slim and trim. And when I met my husband, just love replaced food, and 25 pounds dropped off my body. And 6 months after I got married, that's when I was no longer getting the adrenaline high from relationships, that's when I transitioned to compulsive overeating. And it was very clear to me that all of a sudden, I was hiding food. I would have all these methods of hiding food in my pocket. One of the primary times that I would eat would be on my way from work to home, and I would have to stop a few times to fill up, and then I would have to stop finally to get rid of the food. And I would have all these excuses why I needed to go out to get my stash. I had little ways of hiding where I had the fridge door that would freezer door that would block my husband's view. After the birth of my second child, I was unable, several months after, I was unable to get out of my maternity clothes. My weight was up 50 pounds, and that's when I started the weight loss programs. And they worked until they didn't work anymore. So in 1991, I came to OA, and I've been in and out 4 times. I would leave for a year or a little bit more. But every time I returned, the disease got progressively worse. And the last time I came back, where there might have been some peace with the food before, for the first 2 years back, there was hardly any periods of peace with the food. And still, it took me another 10 years to be reco to become recovered. So almost 3 decades in OA in an unrecovered state. And from the very beginning, I had put down flour and sugar. I had worked through the steps. So I thought that I was just one of those people that couldn't get it in OA. And what I came to see later in February, and it's 5 years, so I hope I'm doing the math right, February 2020, when I had finally, I never had a slim body in OA. I would lose weight. My weight would be at the high end of normal. But finally, letting go of volume through weighing and measuring and having a healthy, a slim body, I shouldn't say healthy, slim body. That was kind of my barometer for recovery, but it's not a slim body is not a sign of not, it is important to have healthy body weight, but for me, in my mind, it was stuck slim. So here I am in a slim body and thinking I'm recovered. And there have been these chocolate bars that have been in my home for months and haven't called to me. And all of a sudden, they're talking to me. Throw them in the garbage. When I went into garbage to take them out, that became my bottom. Because I had to concede that a slim body was not a recovered, I was not recovered, and that I had let go throughout those years of all the foods and ingredients. It had been a long, drawn out process of that, but there was, and eventually let go of volume. But there were those eating behaviors of bites, licks, and tastes that were giving me the effect. And yes, I did have some periods of neutrality, but they were not permanent. You know, I just had to have a little glitch in my life, a little stress, and all of a sudden I'd be binging. It didn't last long, but I thought it's also not a recovered body when your weight is not stable. It's also jumping up and down. So I conceded to my sponsor. I was honest with her about those eating behaviors, and I went through the steps intensively and quickly, within 3 weeks. And 4 weeks after that incident in the garbage, my young son, a young father, had a massive stroke, and there was a 3-hour window before I knew he would be completely recovered. And during that time, you know, if I hadn't gone through the steps, if I hadn't been honest, I don't think I could have managed that situation, those 3 hours. I was all by myself. It was COVID. I was with the baby, my grandson, and I just prayed. I meditated. I called on my support group. I did an inventory, and honestly, I did not pray for an outcome. I prayed for God to support and guide us. And that was my first spiritual awakening in OA. And since then, I am grateful that today I have a little over 5 years of recovery. I'm in a healthy body that doesn't fluctuate, that's stable. And I am happy, joyous, and free today, no matter what the challenge is. I have a relationship with my higher power, and I know that my higher power is there to support and guide me. So I went through all the steps back then, but today I can't live on yesterday's spiritual awakenings. Today I know that I need to continue to clean house. So when those disturbances, I am one of those people that believe that if I'm connected to my higher power, then most of the times I am not disturbed. But when those disturbances start to repeat in my head, you know, in the past, it would have taken me maybe 2 weeks to do an inventory on that. Today, I need to do it as soon as possible. So I need to clean house. And I also need to trust God. And I'm so grateful that in the last a little bit over a month now, my prayer and meditation in the morning was getting very rote. And I had a challenge. I had watched a YouTube video about two-way prayer that challenged me to do that. And I have been doing that two-way prayer practice. I have to say I missed it today. That was the first day, but it challenges you to do it for 30 days. And through that, I feel that God has sent me messages. And when I check them out, they seem very in keeping with God's will. And I'm so grateful for that practice. I also do a spot check, if checking with God through the day, and my nightly review at night. And I'm so grateful because that keeps me trusting in God. But the most important thing as well is working with others. And I am grateful. I've worked with several people over the 5 years. Some of them have recovered, are in the room sponsoring, and that is wonderful, but not everyone has. And I've been listening to some podcasts recently that have challenged me how to work with other people because it's, I recovered through entire abstinence and following the instructions in the big book. So, how do I work with other people who may not be aligned with that and may need to, and are seeking me out as a sponsor? And I've been listening to some podcasts challenging us in OA, how to do that. And I am so grateful for that today. I recently had a sponsee who went through the steps, was a returning member who went to through, God, what, one minute, who went through this step three, who went through the steps in 3 weeks. And that was a treat. And I was able to dedicate the time to her. And I'm grateful that I was. And actually, she did more for me than I gave to her. So I am very grateful for that experience. So what is my life like today? Most days are very peaceful. Today I just shared a step 10. God had showed me that I needed to reconnect with an old friend who we lost touch with, and I saw her yesterday. And when I and we had a lovely visit, but afterwards, it had been over 15 years. Afterwards, this morning, I was having resentful thoughts in my mind, thinking negatively about her. And through this step 10, I was able to unblock myself and to see this person from a different angle. And because I was only focusing on her faults that I had known all along, but God helped me to see her from a different angle. And all of a sudden, after doing the work, those negative thoughts left my head. And is it a coincidence that she texted me in that moment when I sent the step 10 to say, "Oh, Donna, it was so wonderful to see you." Because you know what? I wouldn't have done that before. I didn't. I lived in isolation when I was in the food. And the last time I had been with that friend, I don't know if I was eating at the time, but I certainly did not. We were out shopping and I was into bargain hunting and I couldn't care less about spending time with her. And she was someone who lost her husband 30 years ago. We were a couple friends and we had children together. But God transforms me. And it's funny, it's an ongoing process because I'm 5 years recovered, and these thoughts just come into my head, reach out to her. They're from God, and I'm so grateful for this recovery. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Donna.